Raised Rowdy.
Welcome to the Raised Rowdy Podcast. I'm Nikki T.
My name's Kurt Ozon.
And our guest this week, Miss Carlisle Griffin. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good. Just drinking this delicious Surfside that we talked into drinking.
Oh, yeah. Hold it's on. Yours. Let me get a...
I want to do it also.
And that did not... There we go.
All right. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers.
It's been a long day, so we're having a after work drink.
Yeah. Yeah, I was outside talking on the phone. It took a lot out of me.
Mm-hmm. I pulled a tick off my leg.
Oh,
very
did.
Traumatic. Yeah.
You don't have Lyme's disease?
I probably do.
We don't know yet.
It was just on there for hours, just chilling.
Yeah.
Well, it was probably just hanging out, like, observing. I don't think ticks eat people that are vegetarian or vegan.
I don't know, man. I don't have that good blood. It's not, doesn't have that
cholesterol.
Yeah. Although I did eat a bunch of McDonald's fries, so it was probably
tasty.
The good cholesterol.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Well, Carlisle, thanks for coming on the pod.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you coming on. I remember the first time I heard you sing, and I was like, damn, I didn't know she was that good at singing.
That's a
well, thank you.
Great endorsement.
Well, I didn't even know you were a singer, and then I saw you on stage, and I was like, oh, Carlisle sings? And then I heard you sing, and I was like, oh, this is a different thing.
Yeah, because I think I'd been working at Live Oak for a while.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That was my first job when I moved here. I was bartending there for a while, for a year and a half, 2 years, off and on.
My first job was a bartender also in Nashville, next to now where the Mellow Mushroom is. It used to be a different building. They tore it down.
Okay.
And I would make like $50 a day there. It was no one ever came in.
That doesn't sound like the best job.
It
no,
does not sound
I had a
like
bunch
fun.
Of bad jobs when I first moved to town.
Live Oak was not a bad job.
No, it was fun. Yeah, yeah. When I first got there, like the group of people we had when I first started working was killer. Elite. We had such a good time.
Honestly, they have a really good crew most of the time.
They do. Yeah. I mean, I would say probably like 90% of the friends that I have in town, I've either met working with them there or just met working there in general, patrons of the bar. And yeah, I love Live Oak. That's my home.
Sad about the move down the road.
I know. But
love that on those midtown jobs.
Yeah, it happens.
Everything gets expensive. They should have just had enough money that they could have bought the buildings instead of some.
I know.
Company.
I know.
Well, like I said, from the first time I heard you sing, I was like, well, this thing is different than the stuff that I'm used to seeing. So why don't you kind of explain your sound? Like, sonically, what genres do you think you would dip into?
Right. That's always a fun question.
Yeah.
Because it changes, right? It changes all the time. Because I have so many different influences. And the funny thing is that I live in Nashville and country's really not one of them. Mm-hmm. But I grew up on a lot of like Motown music. Mm-hmm. A lot of that kind of 60s doo-wop feel. It's a big deal in South Carolina. We call it beach music. The state dance there is the shag dance, which is like a version of a swing dance. And my mom was a junior shag champ and my dad's really good at it. And like, that was just a big thing when I was growing up. So that kind of stuff kind of infiltrated in. And then, as I got a little older and started to kind of pick out some things for myself, I gravitated towards a lot of the 70s, like folk singer songwriter, the James Taylor and the Joni Mitchell. And, of course, Fleetwood Mac's my favorite band of all time. So that plays a part in it. And then when I got to college, I played in a jazz ensemble for a while and did some jazz guitar lessons. So that makes up a lot of how I play guitar and how I put together chord progressions and melodies and stuff, I think stems a lot from that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a mix of all those things. And then when I started to get more into songwriting, I was listening to a lot of the more contemporary folk, I guess. Like Jason Isbell is always in the forefront of my mind as like a songwriter. That's kind of what I aspire. I love the way that he writes songs and stories. And so it's kind of a mix of all of those things.
Yeah.
I think it's what I like to think anyway.
Yeah, I think so too. I remember the first time I heard like Symptomatic Daydream, which was your first release. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is definitely Stevie Nicks-y vibes. And I think your voice leans well towards that.
It does, yeah. And that was kind of an accident, honestly, because when I wrote that song in college, and I had lived in Charleston. So I went to college at Clemson and graduated from there in May of 21 and then lived in Charleston for the summer and played some gigs and bartended and saved some money to move here in that August. And so right before I left, I'd gone to a studio there. I'd cut some demos there before, and it's a cool little one-room studio in James Island right outside of Charleston. And I was on the way to the studio. I was going to cut a demo for that song. And I heard another tune by this guy called His Golden Messenger. You ever heard of him? He's a very folky Americana guy. But I can't remember exactly. I think it's Glory Strums is what the name of the song is. But just the vibe of the song and the way that it was all laid out was like, that's what I really would like to hear in my own song.
Yeah.
So it was a lot more cheery. It was a lot more like, I don't know. I don't even really remember exactly how it sounded now because I've played it the other way so many times.
Yeah.
But I got to the studio and I sat down and hammered out an entirely new chord progression, an entirely new harmony and melody part. Like everything was completely different from when it was when I stepped foot into the studio.
Yeah.
And then I came here and I played that song out. It was my first writer's round, which was at, I think it was Belcourt Taps.
Makes sense. RIP.
RIP, yeah. Hosted by Joel Jorgensen. Mm-hmm. It was the Grassroots Power Hour was what it's called. And I had played some songs, and I don't know that I played that one in particular because I don't think that I was very comfortable playing it out yet. And he and I got to talking afterwards, and he's like, well, you know, I produce a little, and maybe send me some of your stuff that you got, and just let me take a listen. And so I sent him that song, and he was like, whoa, this is cool.
Yeah.
And so we took it into the studio, and kind of the second time around, I was more comfortable with it and was more solid in the melody and where I wanted to put emphasis on certain words and whatnot. So mm-hmm. that was where that all came from. But it was really cool when I first came to town because I would play that song and people are like, what the fuck is that? You know?
Well, it's distinct in town specifically, mm-hmm. right? Because you're here and at writers' rounds and a lot of events, there's a lot of country music. I mean, right. There's other genres too.
Mm-hmm.
But in an acoustic setting, a lot of songs sound similar,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That song does not sound similar to the majority of other songs that are played on the stage in that night.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, totally.
Which is cool. And it makes it stick out. So I also like kind of refer to you as like a siren. Like,
okay.
When you're playing, it's hard to look away.
Mm-hmm.
And your voice is part of that, but it's more than that too. You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's part of like the stage presence thing that you have.
Yeah. And I've cultivated that through a lot of different things over the years. Because I did a lot of theater when I was young too.
Mm-hmm.
Did children's theater from the time I was like 6 until, I don't know, whenever I aged out of children's theater. Yeah. And then my high school choir director, she put on a huge musical every spring. Mm-hmm. So that was like, I don't like to call myself a theater kid because I don't think but that I were. Really was, but I totally was. That was like my Super Bowl every year. Yeah. That was my state championship, was the spring musical.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. By the time I was a senior, I was pretty much half like assistant directing the thing.
Yeah.
Staging everything, blocking out, helping with sets, helping put costumes together. Like I was involved.
Yeah.
But when you do that kind of stuff, I think you learn to create a character and you learn to portray yourself as someone else. So I think when it flipped around to me being an artist, like I had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to kind of figure out how to hone that in for my own artist presence when I'm on stage, like who am I there? Mm-hmm. 'Cause I don't know that the Carlisle you see on stage and the Carlisle you get every day is always the same person.
Yeah.
There are similarities.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit different and you got to learn how to talk about your songs and how to perform them in a way that will get people to look, because there's so much talent in this town. There's so much music and you hear it all the time. You're inundated with it.
Yeah.
What do you have to do to set yourself apart?
Yeah.
Is kind of what I was trying to figure out when I first moved. Because also when I first got here, I didn't know what a writer's room was.
Right.
I knew nothing.
Yeah.
And it was actually funny because the first night that I worked at Live Oak, they had, I think it was In the Round,
mm-hmm.
and Trey Lewis was playing. Mm-hmm. And it was right after Dick Down in Dallas had come out.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I don't really know anything about country. I didn't know anything about country when I moved here. I knew that song, though.
Yeah.
And so I'm working and I'm pulling orders and doing whatever. And he starts singing that song and I whip my head around and go, holy shit. Well, that's cool. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just, I don't know. I kind of lost my train of thought there. I don't exactly know where I was going with that. But
how many riders rounds have you bartended at?
Oh, hell, I don't know.
A lot.
Isn't that hard?
A lot. Yeah.
I feel like that's just like, I love going to riders rounds, but I have to be in the mood for it. I have to be open and receptive to young talent. And you know what I mean? It's like going to riders rounds when I'm just, when I don't want to hear, I'm like, if I had to do it every time I went into work, I just feel like it would grind my gears in my brain.
Well, when you're working in that setting, I think,
at least you get to pick the artist, though, you know?
Yeah, usually.
When you do it all the time like that, you kind of learn to tune it out after a while. And that's what I did. But then there would be a couple that would really turn my head around.
That's the thing
I was about to ask. So what are the... Is it some?
Because I know... I'm trying to think. Because it's been a while. That was like... when I first moved here. But I remember hearing Emma Zink for the first time.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, yeah. Like, that's awesome.
Well, the key in my head with a writer's round is, okay, it's just you and your song and a guitar.
Yeah.
So how do you make that stand out in the crowd? And it can be your voice. It can be the song. It could be the inflection. Like, for example, someone that I think is crazy good acoustic is... Kendall Inskeep, who we've had on the pod before, but she can control a room with just her guitar and her talking to the crowd.
Yeah.
And the voice comes in and keeps them there.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I've heard her in there before too. And she was another one. She's crazy talented.
Sometimes it's different things for each artist, but like even
like Dave Kennedy can go to the belting thing.
Yeah.
And get everyone to shut the fuck up and go, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Know?
But we were just at the Rusty Nail and you were playing. You were playing at the Rusty Nail.
The Rusty Nail. Yes. God bless the nail.
I'll be there tonight. But when you were there, there were people that shut the fuck up, turned and watched you, and were completely engulfed in what you were doing.
Yeah.
Right? You have that thing, right? Not everybody has that thing. And it's different for every person.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I remember the guy. Who we no one knew who he was. He was just a dude that was at the bar, stopped what he was doing, watched you perform, and then came up to you after and was like, "You're amazing."
Yeah, he came up and shook my hand.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where it's like that didn't happen the rest of the night.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So, and for me, hosting writers' rounds, moments like that are what feeds me, or like. Fun moments where I'm getting to watch people interact with their friends and stuff like that.
Well, I think it feeds me too.
Yeah.
Because you just never know. It's one of those things, you never know when it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
And I don't always know what it is that causes that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have some ideas and I have certain, you know, bits for certain songs and things that I do, but I never really know what it is. But it's always like super fulfilling that when someone does come up to me after a round and say, that was like, you know, whatever song that was that you wrote feels like exactly what I'm going through. I don't know how you did that. And like, I was really moved by this and like, I don't know. Stuff like that is what keeps it going. What keeps me moving, what keeps me working towards that goal. Because it's like a little bit of validation that you need every once in a while to say that you're doing the right thing. Because you don't get it all the time.
Well, and some of that you can learn and develop, but sometimes you can't teach it.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You can develop it, but it's hard to teach.
Mm-hmm.
You have to.
I agree.
You have to kind of just figure it out or have some of it and increase it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think at least.
I mean, there's always, it takes time, I feel like. And one cool thing about playing writer's rounds is like seeing how people react to the songs is kind of like a little A&R session.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like you might think something's cool, but in a bar setting, it might be too clever or too slow or, you know, certain lyrics don't hit, which is kind of like a good practice ground.
Yeah.
You know, it's like going to the range or something, but for songs.
Yeah.
Getting everything worked out and get your sights lined up.
Yeah. I love that, too, when people are like, I'm trying new songs tonight. I'm like, that's literally what this is for.
Right.
You know?
Right. Exactly.
That's what this is for. Play the song that you want to play or if someone wants to hear it that you know is in the crowd. Great. But if not, like, figure out might be your next
single. What's gonna, it's so good for that. Cause I have played a couple of songs that did not land.
Yeah, it happens.
And I'm like, okay, well, you know, take that one back to the drawing board. But then there are a few where you got to play them a couple of times and then they develop a personality of their own.
Yes.
And then you learn what parts really speak to people and what you need to emphasize. And you just have to pay attention to that kind of stuff and really watch how the crowd reacts to certain things that you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm usually pretty attuned to that. And I think that comes also from like playing cover gigs and things. Like that's what I did. That's really the only outlet for music I had when I was in high school other than choir. And then I played in a cover band all through college. And I still do that when I go back to South Carolina, play a lot down at the beach. And you start to learn. Like I have like my first three. My first three are Dreams by Fleetwood Mac, Valerie by Amy Winehouse, and Ain't No Sunshine, Bill Withers.
Yeah.
And you got a good breadth there. And you just kind of take stock of who's looking, what, you know, piqued somebody's interest, what didn't. And then go from there and just see how they're responding and try to play into this genre and that genre and this type of song and whatever. And you learn to watch. And I think that's extremely beneficial, especially in a songwriter's round setting when you're trying to determine what's going to be the next release. Like, what works here? What kind of lines am I putting out that people are going, oh, that was cool.
Yeah. And I know, like, when we first started talking to you that you were doing primarily solo writing. Is that still the case?
Yeah. I would say, like, 75% of the time. Maybe 80%. But I've started to pick up a little bit more co-writing. I want to get more into it because it still really makes me uncomfortable, I think. And it's probably just because I haven't done it a lot. But I've also, like, other than the first, like, 6 months that I lived here when I was working full-time at Live Oak, I've had a full-time job since then. And I've been working remotely. I've been working from home, doing a lot of different marketing positions and whatnot. So it's hard to schedule co-writes when you're on that schedule because when everybody wants to write, you're in meetings or whatever. And and I'm not a person who can write well in the afternoon. I like to get up. I like it to be the first thing that I do in the morning because by 6 p.m. I've had too much time to think on the day. And I just can't. Like, I over-criticize everything that comes out of my mouth. So it was difficult to schedule then. And I just, it's still such a personal experience for me, songwriting is. And I write a lot of things that are really close to home. Not that you can't do that in a room with someone else, but it's just, it's a skill that I'm working on learning, but now I'm not working anymore. Well, it jobs wasn't exactly my decision, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know what? And it was kind of like this last job I had, I was working with them on a contract, a year long contract, and, had kind of been told that, you know, they were planning to take me on full time after it was over. And then about a month ago, they're like, change of plans and management. We're not keeping that position anymore. And so my last day was last Wednesday.
Geronimo.
Yeah. But it was kind of cool. Like at first when I heard that, I was like, oh shit, what am I going to do? But then things just kind of started happening. People were reaching out and there were opportunities that arose that I wouldn't really be able to participate in if I were working full time. And it's been kind of cool to watch it all. Cause it was really scary when I first found that. I was like, what am I going to do? But pieces are falling into place. I don't feel so scared about it anymore. And I'm actually really excited to devote this like full time. Finally. I feel like I'm in a place that I can do that.
It's definitely a strange thing. And I'm not, of course, a musician, but, I've always juggled Raised Rowdy and something else. And it's definitely equally frustrating when you're doing it part time and full time.
Yeah.
But your level of things that you can get done is so much at a higher level.
Right.
Right. Because and you still don't get everything done that you wanted to get done, but you're so much closer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's hard too, like in the position that I was in, like it takes up a lot of your brain space during the day. So by the time I had an opportunity to write a song or do whatever, I'm like so drained.
Yeah. I just want to eat dinner and go to bed.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that made it really hard, but, yeah, I'm excited for this next little phase to really put more time into it. And I've already got, I had a write this week and I've got two lined up this week. And now that I've got the bandwidth for it, it's a little bit different. So I'm excited to do more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're primarily going to be doing gigs in South Carolina for the next few weeks?
Yeah, months? I'm gone. Like I leave Sunday, I think. And then I'm going to be down there until Labor Day. Just hacking it out.
Getting it out.
Yeah. But it'll be cool. Since I'm not working, then I'll have, you know, half a week to write or
whatever.
Do whatever. Yeah. And then play it the weekend and
gain inspiration.
Start over again. Yeah. It's really cool. Like the beach that I'm going to is where I grew up. I grew up on that beach. And we always went there for family vacation in the summers. And when I was in high school and in college, I worked there in a little surf shop that we have, which it's always funny calling it a surf shop. We have two surfboards in stock, and I don't think either of them have ever been sold. It's not really a surfing beach. It's just sit and enjoy the kind of beach, sound of the ocean kind of beach. But I've developed a lot of friends there over the years and a lot of the local crowd, and there's a little bar I like to go to called Whaley's. It always has some characters in it, and I just like to go and sit and listen. So I think I'll be able to draw a lot of inspiration while I'm there. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I'm really looking forward to kind of just the time out to get my cards together. So when I come back in September, I'll be ready to hit the ground running and do whatever I need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any music in the tank right now or anything that you're trying to cut?
I do. I have one song that's completely done. But I just have not, like I said, had the brain space to figure out the release strategy. Plan. Yeah, because I don't like it. I really like it. I think I played it at
The Nail.
The full band one at Losers.
Yeah. Which was awesome, by the way.
Yeah, that was fun. And it was, it's a really cool song. It's different a little than what I have been doing, but I really like it, and I just don't want it to, like, die on the vine. Yeah. So.
Well, that's what, I mean, when you first start putting out music, you think that make a song, it's good, it goes into the world, and the thing does its thing. But that's not really how it works.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not. And it was interesting. Like, I learned that on my second release.
Yeah.
Because the first one's, you know, a little different. When people have been asking you for years, when are you going to put a song out? When can I listen to you on iTunes? Can I, whatever? And you finally do that, and everybody's like, oh my God, this is so cool. And like, we can listen to you on Spotify now. We can listen to you here, this, and the other. And like, there's a lot of hype on the first one. You don't really have to do a whole lot. And then the second one comes, and it's like, oh, okay. Well,
another song.
There's
great.
Another one. Great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, it's hard too. I mean, having, if you think about it, like, I'm sure it's expensive to make music.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, okay, what's the rollout plan?
Yeah.
Right. Do we have any video stuff done for it?
Mm-hmm.
How are you pushing it to try to get people to listen to it?
Right.
Because if only the people that know about your music are listening to it, it's not going to go
very far. It defeats the purpose.
Yeah. So it's like, how do you get it to new ears? How do you get it to new eyes?
Mm-hmm.
And then branding, right?
Like, yeah.
Who is Carlisle Griffin?
Exactly.
Like, what do you want to show people that are finding you?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep, that's the $1 million question.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's the things that you take the time to think about while you are at the beach.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly, yeah. Because I really struggle on the social media front to begin with. I just, that is not how my brain is wired whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, since I've moved here, it's been a continuous struggle. Because I just don't know, you know? I have a lot of ideas, but then I'm probably my worst critic. And that stops me from doing a lot of things.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a problem that I'm working through to just get over it. It's not that serious. Just.
I know. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Like, when I first started emceeing stuff, I was like, just in my head about everything. And I'm like, why am I worried about this? I'm up here for 30 seconds.
Right.
Like, what am I really going to mess up? Someone's name? I'm going to do
that
for sure.
It's humbling too. Like on Instagram or whatever, you know, you can see how long someone's like, what the average watch time is.
Yeah.
And I'll put a video out that's, I don't know, a minute long, and I've cut 15 takes, and I'm, you know, picking apart the way that I look at this certain point in the video and making sure that all the notes are hit and this, that, and the other. And I look at that, and it's like, average watch time is 6 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, shit.
Well, that's
go back to Vine.
Yeah, for real.
But that's the other thing, too, is like, okay, so if you're saying, okay, I want that to be, if one of your goals is I want people to listen to 30 seconds, right, of a 60-second clip. How do you hook them?
Right.
Right? So it's being mindful of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we're starting to do forward-facing content. I'm incredibly uncomfortable doing it.
Yeah.
I'm incredibly uncomfortable doing it. But if I don't start getting comfortable doing it, then I'm never going to do it.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, like, when we're doing it, I'm like, all right, what's the hook or what's the payoff at the end?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, and that's another thing, too, I think is important for artists is your music's great. And that'll keep people there.
Yeah.
But how do you get them to be invested in you?
Right.
So you got to give them a piece of your life.
Mm-hmm.
What's that piece of your life that you're willing to give them?
Yeah.
And then how are you going to present it? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a struggle. And I think it absolutely. Is for a lot
of
us.
Don't, if you don't try it.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah. We're just, that's where we are in the frame of things. And that's how it's working these days. So.
Yeah. It's the same thing for me. Like, I always wanted it to be about Raise Rowdy and not me, but people care about me.
Yeah, but you're the face,
too.
So you got to pull it all together. Yeah.
But I mean, it's how it works. Like, I don't want to do that, but I'm doing it, you know, because I don't think there's the right or wrong way to do it, but that's a quicker, easier way than most ways, you know?
Totally.
And with the modern landscape of music right now, if your goal is to get your music to more ears, the easiest way to do that is viral content.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if the songs are great, they can drive that, but you need the audience to kind of drive it. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, like Priscilla Block, before her big song popped, she had a couple other songs that popped small. Mm-hmm. That led to that big one. If she would have just started doing social media with that big one, who knows if it would have worked.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Might not have. It probably wouldn't have at least at the same level. But she built a little bit of a following of people that loved Priscilla Block. And then when she put out a song that really hit home with them, they were like,
yeah,
oh, this
here
is
we go.
The thing.
Yeah.
You know? And it's hard. I mean, think about like Ella Langley. Like, Ella's had a couple songs pop.
She's killing it.
Yeah, she's crushing it. But I also see how much work her and her team are doing to make sure she crushes it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, she is thinking about that stuff all the time.
All the time.
You know, not just her, but managers.
Everybody.
And she has a label now, and there's a whole team thinking about that stuff. One of the things that they would do at Big Loud is they would do a thing called brand DNA. So when an artist would come in, they would kind of sit down with the artist, and you can do this yourself, and talk about what makes you you. Build those pillars out.
Right.
And then kind of use those as, is this fitting inside of this? And like, is it, am I expressing something that I want to express in this thing of things that we said we want to express? You can do that yourself, though. You can sit down with a pen and a paper and write that out. Or with one of your friends that knows you very well.
Yeah.
Maybe even better than you, who you might have at the beach, or it might be a family
member.
And sit down and say, what makes me me? Here's the things I think. And then they'll be like, well, think about this. Think about this. Because they know you as well as you know you, and they're on the outside looking in, so it's easier to see.
Yeah, that's really valuable information too.
It is.
Because a lot of times I think we see ourselves very differently than other people do. So that input is extremely helpful. I have a younger sister who's very social media like forward. She's very good at it.
Yeah.
She's into all the trends.
Yeah.
She keeps me up to date.
You should maybe have her.
So, No, I already told her. I was like, listen.
My digital gal.
Yeah, I need some help.
Yeah.
Because I'm struggling.
Well, and hard part doing it yourself is doing it.
Doing it, yeah.
If you have someone there helping you do it, or if you scheduled a time to do it, it gets easier.
Right.
You know?
You gotta treat it like a job. Like the
if
rest
you
of
scheduled
it.
Someone to come and shoot video for you, you're going to make sure that you have some ideas, at least, of what video you want to do.
Right.
Right? Because it's happening whether you are prepared or not.
Totally.
So you're going to...
You got to do it.
You're going to be prepared at least some, you know? But I think that's an important piece, too. And, I mean, if you're talking about trends of things that we hear on the podcast, everybody hates TikTok. Everybody feels like they don't know exactly what to put into the world, you know?
They all want to sign up to be singer-songwriters. But now it's like, instead of being a singer-songwriter, you have to be a personality and you have to... provide different kinds of benefits for your followers. Like sometimes like you have to be funny sometimes and that pops off and you have to point at stuff. People like that, I guess. And
yeah, they do like the pointing. Yeah. I don't know.
Here's why the pointing works. People can see your face and they can hear your music.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's you're there and it's cheap to film. You do it with your iPhone. You don't need to hire Ike or anybody to shoot it.
You could, but you don't have to.
Yeah. Hire Ike, don't get me wrong, but so you just, you know, point at stuff or just kind of flow with it and then there you go.
I think the keys too is like, how do you get people, because everyone's doom scrolling now.
Oh yeah,
right. I am,
myself included.
I am.
Yeah, Kurt's
okay, all right, Kurt.
Yeah. Kurt's baked at the house doom scrolling. Yeah. But like, when you scroll, if I hear a song right away, it could catch me. Sometimes it doesn't. sometimes I don't hear enough of the song for it to catch me, unless it goes straight into the part that's going to catch me.
Right.
But if it's like, hey, give me blah, 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 and they catch me with that, they might catch me.
Mm-hmm.
And that might make me stay there for 15 seconds to hear what's going on.
Yeah, enough to get a vibe. Yeah. That's what I found myself doing a lot of that lately.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to break out of it, but I'm also trying to change my frame of mind to, well, let's make this, you know, worthwhile. Let me see what's working on these.
Yeah.
Let me take a little note.
I've been doing a lot of that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking it's more professional development these days.
Yeah. Well, and it is, though.
Yeah.
Because, and when you hear, when you get caught on something,
mm-hmm.
think about why you got caught on it.
Right.
What quality of that content made you stay?
Because
I do that all the time now. I'm like, oh, this had a hook. I just didn't realize it.
Right.
The best hooks you don't realize are a hook. And then it catches you, and you're like, oh, that was a hook.
Oh, good job.
You know?
It's like little cute critters. I'm like, oh, look at these little baby raccoons or something. Yep. I'm like, man, that's cute.
Yeah, so maybe it's a baby raccoon in your arms when you're singing. I don't know.
Right.
No, but it's...
Could be.
A lot of it is just talking to the person that's on the screen.
Yeah.
You're breaking that wall.
Yeah.
You know? Because they're used to hearing a song. People have been doing that since social media started.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're interacting with them before they know who you are, they're like, oh.
Hey.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then figure out what version of that. People, you can even use zooming effects. Like, Ike helps us with videos, and like, he'll zoom in on a dramatic moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, that can keep the people there, you know? Or you can be like, there's that one dude that's like, come here. And then it zooms in.
Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah, but that's his thing.
Yeah.
Is he has that, hey, come here. Listen.
Uh-huh.
Or, like, talk quieter so people, like, pay attention.
Pay attention,
you know,
yeah.
There's lots of weird things that you can use.
Or, like, ASMR.
Okay, that I can't stand. I don't know what it is.
Here's some Surfside ASMR for y'all. Yeah.
No, I will skip that so fast.
You're like, get this away from me.
I do not like it.
I just listen to podcasts on ASMR, Stuff You Should Know. Yeah. If you guys ever check them out, they're one of my other favorite pods. And it's just, that's a whole world, ASMR.
Yeah. I remember,
I don't get it.
I did a video and I tapped on the microphone like this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It wasn't this microphone. I think it was one like this where I'm like,
oh, yeah.
And they, Heather, one of the girls that used to help me with the Finish Rowdy was like, ASMR. And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't even think about that, you know? But there's no right or wrong thing to keep people there.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I will say that I think can really help is looking outside of what you consider to be your genre.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're like, oh, I could do a version of this, right? And if a rapper's doing it and you're doing the same style of content,
mm-hmm.
it's not like you're biting their thing. You know what I mean? You're just using that style of capture or that style of editing,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's benchmarking. I mean, businesses have been benchmarking for years, but you don't just have to benchmark other people that are in your concept. Like Nike doesn't have to benchmark Adidas.
Mm-hmm.
They can benchmark Red Bull.
Right.
You know? Which is another successful business, but isn't something that's in their exact wheelhouse. So if they take bits from that, you're not going to notice it because the crossover is not 100%.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Another thing with your music is, I know you, the term is pretty popular right now, like yacht rock.
Oh, don't even get me started.
Yeah. Carla, I feel like your music has a deep crossover with what people would consider themselves fans of, like yacht rock.
Yeah, I'm a huge yacht rock fan. I don't know that anyone's ever told me that my music directly correlates to that.
No. I'm saying,
I know what you're saying.
The consumer base.
The consumer base, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I am a 60-year-old woman on the inside.
Yeah.
And I love Michael McDonald.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
I just, that blue-eyed soul gets me every time, man. I saw them. I saw the Doobie Brothers last year.
Oh, really?
I lost my shit. Lost it.
That's going to be me at Creed in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was there. Yeah, I get a lot of flack for that too. Because I love it so much. And Vaden especially will be the first to tell me how much it sucks. And I'm like, you just aren't listening.
Yeah.
You're just not having any fun.
There's not enough time for haters, you know?
There isn't. There really isn't.
Yeah. Well, in my head, it's just easy listening music.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with yacht rock is I don't think it's necessarily the songs. I think it's kind of like how they're presented too.
Oh, totally.
You know?
Totally. Yeah, because not all of the writing is like fantastic. However, the production is
Simon.
So yeah. good. And it just makes you feel good. It makes you want to sit on a boat and have a beer and relax.
Chill out.
Yeah, it just makes you feel good.
Yeah.
I can't feel bad when I'm listening to that.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Yep. Is that like, what do you find yourself listening to the most in music terms?
Well, I'm like, I don't know.
Same.
I don't know.
I listen to our podcast guests the music the most. I'll say that.
Yeah. I'm a situational listener.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I'm working out, it's a 90s grunge typically. Mm-hmm. If I'm on a road trip, then I'm usually listening to something that I want to pay attention to the writing. So
FGL's first record.
Yeah, I like that.
True.
So then it's more like the Americana sort of vein there.
Yeah.
If I'm just, you know, wind is down, having a cruise, yacht rock probably.
Yeah. FGL's first record.
Baby, you song.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. And then recently I've been getting back into jazz a bit. So that's just kind of my morning, getting up, moving around the house, starting my day sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then like beyond yacht rock, I really love like 80s pop music. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll listen to that a lot if I'm just, taking for a walk. Oh, Tears for Fears and The Police and,
I'm a huge Police
Eddie
fan.
Money.
Yeah.
I can love Eddie Money.
I just got a Police t-shirt.
Did you really?
Yeah, I've had a few over the years, but I got one that it's pretty good.
I really like the Police.
My brother Steve was a big part of my musical influence. Mm-hmm. He's like 13 years older, so he's kind of like uncle-aged brother.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And then he was very big into Stevie Nicks and Fleetwood and the Police.
Mm-hmm.
And then my brother Sean, who's 2 years younger than him, was also a big Police guy. So like they both liked that. I was like, this has to be cool.
Has to be cool. Yeah. I love that.
Have you ever seen them live?
No, I haven't.
I've gotten to see them twice. Really, really cool.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah. First time was like right when they started coming back on tour. Mm-hmm. Me and Steve drove to Hershey, Pennsylvania. It was like one of their first shows. And Sting's voice was mint.
God, he's so good.
He is so good.
He's so
but
good.
But the voice, as you get older, voice is a hard thing to keep.
It is.
You know?
It's difficult.
So all the guys in the band were slamming. But the second time I saw him, Sting's voice wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, it's hard.
It was like almost a year later.
That's always hard.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to keep on a long tour.
But or just in general, even at that age, because your voice fluctuates so much. Like if you listen to Joni Mitchell, she's a great example, which she was, a chain smoker. But she had that really, really high soprano bird tone.
Mm-hmm.
When she was young in her first couple of records, and then as it progresses and you get to like Clouds, she's singing both sides now like two octaves from where she usually did it.
Yep.
And she's that more that really alto contralto, almost so deep now that her voice has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen a couple, like I saw Van Morrison a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Crisp.
Yeah.
So good. James Taylor.
Yeah.
Still sounds great.
You say Michael McDonald, like
Michael McDonald.
He travels with a vocal coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which he keeps his shit tight.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I saw Whiskey Myers at a bar in West Virginia.
And hell I was
like, they were hanging out, like the band was hanging out after in the bar because it was like, you know, and the lead singer like wasn't talking. And I was like, damn, he must hate us. And they were like, no, he doesn't like talk on the road.
He just got to say
because his vocal, Cody's vocal is so heavy on like on his vocal or so hard on his
voice
that he just chills when he's not singing.
It's
crazy.
It's but I'm glad to see that it's trending more towards people are starting to pay more attention to that because it really feeds into the longevity
for
your career and your ability to do that for years on years, because I kind of know a little bit about vocal health and I'm teaching myself a little bit more now because I've lost it, but I did like voice lessons in high school and most of college. And so I was taught how to sing to a certain extent of how to not, stress your cords, how to not sing from your diaphragm and your chest and not through your throat, because that's what really strains you and you get nodes and all that scary stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of those kind of like 60s, 70s, even 80s artists didn't they were partying, you know, they were having fun, which totally go for it.
Yeah.
But now they can't perform in the way that they used to because they just didn't take care of it.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, this is the one thing that has created me as a person. That is the one constant thing that I've done every single year since I was a conscious person is music. I've been a singer. Mm-hmm. And if I were to ever lose that, I would have a total identity crisis.
Yeah.
You know? So I want to be able to do it for as long as I can possibly do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that's a powerful part of it. I know Kurt is a big ambassador for vocal coaching because you hear people that can't sing an hour and a half long set.
Yeah.
You know? And I think playing cover gigs, while it does stress out your voice, also teaches you how you can keep it for a longer period.
But it helps you build up the stamina. Because when you're playing for 3 hours and you're doing it 3 days in a row, like, that's a lot. I mean, when you're on the road, you're playing probably more per week, maybe, but you're doing a shorter set. So it's a little bit easier to condense all of that energy into an hour and a half as opposed to 3 hours.
Yeah.
But it can get to be a lot. But I agree with you. Like, usually when I am in the throes of doing those kind of gigs for a long period of time, I notice that, my range increases a little bit and I'm able to hold on for 3 to 4 hours and still feel okay when it's over.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that all comes from, I know how to protect it, how to support it so that I'm not just screaming.
Yeah.
You get into some places where the sound system shit and you can't hear yourself. And so you got to strain a little bit more than you particularly would enjoy. But I think it can be beneficial, especially like kind of where I am now, just still cutting my teeth a little bit of building up that stamina. So when the time comes that it's, you know, time for me to go on a tour and sing my own stuff every weekend, that I'll be prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's, I mean, there's no right or wrong way, of course, to do it, but I think that's a way that helps you with trying to extend it as far as you can, you know, and having the background like you sound like you have and Kurt has in the music industry, they teach you that stuff early. Like, hey, you got to protect this thing. You gotta keep it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's probably, I mean, if you get arthritis in your hands, Kurt, it's going to be hard to play guitar. You know,
this is why I'm not snowboarding. So I see all these people break their collarbones. I'm like,
can't do that.
Oh, God. Nope. My job's going too good right now.
Yeah. No, and that's it. But I mean, as a singer, like, your voice is your gift, you know, and that's if not that, then you're a songwriter. You
exactly. Know? You're, yeah. Which and that would be fine, voice. But
yeah, not the same.
No, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Because I've always like I feel in my bones that I'm more of an artist. Mm-hmm. Like, I was meant to be on the stage. I was meant to be out front. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's important to me to be able to do that for a long time. And because that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I feel most at home. That's one of the only things I feel that I'm actually really good at.
Well, you've been practicing for a while too.
I have been practicing and I will continue to practice. And I think that my entire life I'll be practicing.
Yeah. Is anyone else in your family pursued music or are you the first?
I don't really have anybody else in my family that's really like super musically inclined. My mom was in the band and she played clarinet for a year and then she was the drum major. So she just got up on the stand and told everybody what to do. She later became a teacher. So she was prepped for that. And my grandma, she plays piano. And she's kind of the one I think that really got me into music. Cause I started singing in church when I was probably 5 or 6 and she was always in the choir and she pushed our high school choir teacher when I was a little bit older. I think I was probably 11 or 12 to start giving me vocal lessons because she usually didn't teach kids that young. But somehow talked her into it. And so I started taking voice lessons because of her. She bought my first guitar. She got me my first guitar lesson. Yeah. And she also tried to make me take piano for a while. And I didn't take to that as well as I took to guitar. I kind of wish that I would have, but you know, everything's 2020 in hindsight.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was always just a big supporter of that and of my talent and making sure that I did something with it. But no one in my family has really ever been extremely musical. Like I said earlier, my mom was a champion shag dancer.
Yeah.
The woman can move, but she doesn't sing, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was new for all of us when I started to really kind of pick it up and make it my thing. And when I made the decision to move to Nashville, my parents were super supportive, and I don't know that they fully understand it. I don't think that they fully understand it now, but it's okay because they are supportive and they just want to see me chase my dreams and do what makes me happy. And that's all I could ever ask for. Yeah. They're wonderful. My entire family is wonderful. It was new for all of us. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I knew one person when I moved here, didn't know anything about the industry. So everything that I've learned from then to now is what I've just found out on my own.
Yeah.
I didn't have much of a guide.
Most people don't.
No, they don't. And honestly, I think that's the best way to do it. Because if you come in blind, then you don't have any expectations. You just got to get in there and figure it out how it works. And I don't know that I really know how it works, but you know, I've met people that have taught me a lot about the industry and have taught me a lot about what a good song is made out of, and taught me about performance, and taught me about, you know, booking gigs for yourself and all that kind of stuff. So it's been an interesting journey. But I love it, you know? Yeah. Every day is a new day.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting to get to see your journey kind of from you getting to Nashville and just watch your music turn from songs that I could hear on stage to now ones that we can hear anywhere you have a streaming service.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm going to make you play a song with Kurt. We just got
to
figure out.
I'm ready. All this talk about singing, I'm ready to hear her sing. Yeah.
But always thank you so much for always being down to play our events.
Oh yeah. Anytime, man.
Just always being willing to make those people stop and pay attention. Cause that's something that when you play music that people do.
Yeah. Well, it's my favorite thing to do. Yeah. So anytime.
Do you want to plug your socials? Tell everybody where they can follow you.
Yeah. So I am Carlisle Griffin Music, I think on all the platforms, mm-hmm. on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Rogue Fry. How did we let that one go? And
how do you spell? That's not an easy name to spell.
It's Carlyle.
Car, like a car.
Car.
Lyle. Like Lyle. Lyle of it.
Yeah. Like Lyle. Perfect. You got it. See, it's not that hard.
Well, thank you for being you. And I know that's the only way you know how to do it, but true. It's appreciated.
Yeah. Thank you. That's good to know.
Absolutely. I'm Nikki T.
I'm Kurt Ozon, and we'll see you on the front row. Thank you.